This is a podcast from the BBC. To find out more, go to bbc.co.uk/radio3. This week, the Jazz Library podcast focuses not on an individual instrumentalist, but a whole school of players. We're going to be looking at the Gypsy Jazz guitarists, as they're known, the group of Roma players, or Manouche, or Gitan, who followed in the wake of Django Reinhardt as a whole instrumental tradition. And to talk me through the highlights of that long-standing tradition, I'm joined by John Etheridge. John, we know about festivals in places like Saint-Moix-sur-Seine and the others around the world where people get together. But in fact, this tradition of Manouche playing goes back even before Django.
Well, yes, it was a sort of slight surprise to me to find that there were players like Barrow Ferrer, who we're going to hear, who were contemporaries of Django and were playing in this style that was developed as part of the musette thing with the accordion players, playing very hard, very loud, producing a lot of volume, and in a style that we would normally associate with Django. In fact, it sort of rather suggests that this way of playing was established and it was Django who brought in the jazz element.
Now, we're going to hear Django admittedly only playing chordal accompaniment on this. This is one of the very first records he made in March 1933. But he is a bit part player, really, here. It's Guerino, the accordionist, Pierre Pagliano, who's the violinist, and, as you said, Barrow Ferrer, who actually was later to be Django's accompanying guitarist. But he's very much in the spot, like, especially on this dazzling opening of the track.
Absolutely. I mean, it's riveting. This, you'd think it was Django, of course, if you know better, but it is absolutely virtuosic, particularly the opening arpeggios.
That's Brise Napolitaine by Guerino and his orchestra, recorded in Paris in March 1933, and the band was Guerino, the accordionist, who led the piece, Pierre Pagliano on violin, Pierre Barrow Ferrer on guitar, with Django Reinhardt and Lucien Galopin on rhythm guitar, and a man known only as Tartabou on the bass. And that comes from an album called Accordion, Musette, Swing, Paris, 1913-41, on the French Frémo Associé label. That's a very good collection, actually, John, of the genre that this gypsy jazz grew out of. And we're going to jump from that collection on Frémo to another 3-CD set, which in this case is about Barrow and his brothers Serran and Matelot Ferrer, who were all originally from Rouen, of a Spanish gypsy family originally. They were part of the gypsy encampment outside Paris where Django himself had lived as a child.
Yeah, the zone or something.
That's what it's called, yeah, the zone where tourists never set foot. We're going to hear an example now of Barrow Ferrer playing a piece actually written by Django. And it's interesting because now there's a little touch of Django's sound coming in. But he's still, I think, looking back much more at the earlier tradition.
Yes, I think that's right. I mean, obviously by now, this is
1939.
1939, yes. Obviously Django had established himself as a great star of European jazz. But what amazes me, and it's what Barrow Ferrer said himself, he said, I didn't have any envy of Django's technique because he felt he was his equal, which is, of course, an astonishing thing because everybody thought of Django as having the most outrageously flamboyant and virtuosic technique that anybody heard. And Barrow sounds his equal technically, but he said, I didn't have the jazz ideas or the creativity. And he was quite honest about that. And I think that's the case. This sounds like a gypsy piece, whereas when you hear Django, it always sounds like gypsy-inflected jazz, and I think that's the difference. Thank you.
Jaja, also known as Chez Jacquet and À la Petite Chaumerie, written by Django Reinhardt and played there by the solo guitar Barrow Ferré with his brother Matelot and his cousin Chalin Ferré with the bassist Maurice Spoyeur in March 1939. And that's from an album rather confusingly called Les Frères Ferré under the name Barrow, Saran and Matelot, the three brothers, on the French Fremo label. We're going to stick with that set and move from the solo guitar of Barrow, who, as you were saying, John, never quite moved wholesale into a jazz solo style, although he's a wonderful jazz accompanist, to hear his brother Saran, who, again, is normally heard as an accompanying guitarist, who ended up being the most recorded of the three of them. And this band shows him very much in imitative mode, trying to lead a band that does what the Hot Club with Django and Stefan Grappelli had been doing up till the beginning of the war. This is 1941, so occupied Paris, the Nazis officially frowning on jazz and on Romani musicians, but in this particular case allowing a group that sounded like the very popular Hot Club to carry on.
Well, yes, this whole thing about how this music carried on in Paris, despite officially, from the German government point of view, being made by inferior people, is a very interesting story, but you know, perhaps not for this programme. But Saran, yes, listening to this Tiger Rag, you can see that already we're getting this pattern that is part of gypsy jazz music from now onwards, which is you get a virtuoso guitar player playing a number of phrases that are lifted directly from Django's recording and then some of his own stuff, and in a very sort of self-consciously speedy and virtuosic way. And Saran was one of Django's early devotees. And he's making a conscious effort on this track to play quite a lot of the phrases from Django's recording.
Saran Ferré and the Swing Quintet of Paris, recorded in June 1941, with Saran as the solo guitarist, Robert Bermosset as the violinist, and the brothers Barrow and Matelot Ferré on rhythm guitars, with, again, Maurice Spoyeur on the bass. And that, again, comes from Les Frères Ferré on the Fremo label. One more track to come from that now, because we've heard Barrow and we've heard Saran. Right. Really can't go further hearing Matelot, who's important not just because he spawned another generation of Ferré musicians, but also because his style looks back over his shoulder towards his family's origins in Spain and begins during the 40s to move a little bit away from Django.
Oh, yes, I think so. I think this track we're going to hear, you can hear the genesis of something slightly different. I mean, he's playing quite chordally, and in later recordings I've heard of him, he really does begin to sound quite Andalusian and Spanish, and there's a lot of sort of tremolo lead lines and not so much fast arpeggiating and Django clichés. You don't hear those with Matelot.
This is La Vipère du Trottoir, the pavement snake. Thank you. La Vipère du Trottoir, The Pavement Snake, recorded by Jean Matelot-Ferré and his sextet in December 1943. Matelot-Ferré on the solo guitar with René Duchossoir on rhythm guitar, Marcel Fabre on bass, Jackie Bambou on the drums, and Silvio Soboud on clarinet with Camille Martin on vibraphone. That very much demonstrating the way that bands had moved away. And there's a very large number of examples of other work by the three Ferré brothers on that set, Les Frères Ferré, Barreau, Saran and Matelot, on the Fremo label. So I do recommend that as a way of charting the early history of Django's contemporaries. And we can't leave Django's contemporaries without the man who, had he not had an older brother, would probably have been recognised as one of the greatest of all those guitarists, and that's Joseph Reinhardt.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, this is, I think, from 1943, this recording. So, obviously, he'd been sitting alongside Django for years and years and years. So he's absorbed much more of the jazz feeling that you expect from Django. And he was a great guitarist in his own right. And, of course, a light is as bright as the light next door to it. So, yeah, unfortunately, he was Django's brother.
For me, the most interesting thing about this is not just the degree to which Joseph has absorbed his brother's style, but the violinist. He recorded under the name Claude Laurence, but he was, in fact, André Odier, the French jazz critic, the author of Jazz, Its Evolution and Essence. And it suddenly explains a lot about why he was such an astute listener to jazz, because he was obviously a rather sophisticated musician
very,
in his own
good.
Right.
Very good violin player. Yeah.
Joseph Reinhardt and his ensemble, recorded in December 1943 with Claude Laurence, otherwise André Odier, on violin, Barreau Ferré again on rhythm guitar, Emmanuel Sudio on bass and Gaston Léonard on the drums. That comes from a proper box called Gypsy Jazz, which is an excellent way of picking up the story from the 3-CD collection of the Ferrés that we started with and moving it right through till the mid-1950s. And that's where we're going to go now, to a musician who's the first non-gitan or manouche that we've heard so far, who's an Italian called Henri Crolla. He actually grew up in Italy, moved to the south of France, and then as a teenager came and settled in the zone outside Paris where he heard Django. And clearly there's lots of Django, and by this time the late Django, who just died by the time this record was made in 1955. But the amplified Django is strongly present in Henri Crolla's playing.
Yes, I mean, well, this is the first track we've heard with electric guitar. But still, even though it's electric guitar, it doesn't sound American electric guitar. So there's something about the bounce of the sound, a bit of string bending and the vibrato, which allies it to Django, although he's not in any way a Django copyist. But you immediately know this is a European, French, whatever performance. And so I suppose in that way it fits with this post-Django thing that we're looking at. And I know he recorded quite a lot with Stefan Grappelli. He was also apparently, you know, quite friendly with Nagin, who was Django Reinhardt's wife. And when Crolla died in 1960, she said, "The guitar is dead now." So he was obviously very popular with the Gypsies. Thank you.
guitar and his ensemble in June 1955 in Paris. That's Maurice Meunier, can just be heard there on reeds, with Michel Aussé not playing very much on the vibes, Maurice Vander on piano and Emmanuel Soudio on the bass once more, and Jacques David on the drums. That comes from the proper box Gypsy Jazz, which spans the whole genre from Django's early recordings with Jean Sablon right through to that heartthrob of the 1950s, Sacha Distel. We're going to move to another really interesting survey album now on the Iris music label called Gypsy Jazz School, and hear just two excerpts of what I guess were the generation who were contemporaneous with Kröller.
Yes, I've read them referred to as the lost generation because they hardly recorded, and after Django's death, the genre went silent, as it were, for a bit. But this track we're going to hear, which is Bousquet, who was part of this generation, hardly recorded. In many ways, I think it's sort of typical of the start of what we associate with classic post-Reinhardt gypsy jazz. In other words, there's a rhythm guitar on its own, or perhaps two of them, and then there's a lead guitar where the guy, in this case, plays Django solo on Dark Eyes, which is one of the most amazing solos ever. And when you hear it played as a piece, you realise how incredibly constructed it is and how it's absolutely perfect, you know. So that he plays that note for note, and then he does a bit of his own thing. But the problem is, his own thing is not as constructive and as creative as Django's thing. And this is a sort of element that keeps reappearing, actually. So it's good to listen to this Bousquet as a sort of precursor of modern gypsy jazz.
Iris music album Gypsy Jazz School, that was Patot Bousquet with Dark Eyes, and very much an example of the gypsy jazz of the 1950s, the so-called lost generation. And you're listening to the Jazz Library podcast on BBC Radio 3 with me, Alan Shipton, and my guest, John Etheridge, looking at the whole generation, or the three or four generations, of gypsy guitar players who've taken jazz on from the era of Django Reinhardt. And full details of this rather confusing plethora of names, many of whom are related to the Ferré brothers, can be found on the Jazz Library website. That's bbc.co.uk/radio3/jazzlibrary. Well, one author who's done a lot to bring to attention this whole tradition of playing is the American guitarist Michael Dregney, who now has a book out about Django. And Michael swears blind that there isn't a recording by the man we're going to hear next, who's called Jacques Montaigne, but the people at Iris have tracked down something obviously made under the table on a cassette player in a bar, but my goodness, it's fantastic playing.
Yes, it really swings, this version of Charmaine by Jacques Montaigne, who apparently was never recorded. And of course, this isn't a recording, really. As you say, it's something from a bar with five or six people in it, and they're playing in the corner, as anybody who's been a playing in the corner jazz musician can totally visualise this situation. But it's not a Reinhardt solo played note for note, and he's playing, well, you know, with some gypsy stuff. It's very jazz, and it's very appealing, actually. Thank you.
was Charmaine by the otherwise unrecorded Jacques Montaigne from Gypsy Jazz School on the Iris Music label, and that contains a number of tracks by musicians who would otherwise have been forgotten and of whom there are some biographical details in Michael Dragney's books. We're going to move on to the next generation now. Now, I mentioned that Matelot Ferry had been the father of a generation of players, and principal amongst them, Boulou and Elios, his sons, who are telepathic in their ability to play with one another. Phrases start on one guitar and they finish on the other. They are quite extraordinary. And 15 years ago for Radio 3, we recorded them in the Holywell Music Room in Oxford, and I had the chance to introduce them. And they played the piece we're going to hear now. This is one of Bach's two-part inventions, very much given their treatment. And with the pianist Alain Jean-Marie, they start with what Bach wrote, and then they take it somewhere really quite outside the Gypsy Jazz tradition.
Well, it's typical of them. I remember I came across them late 70s, early 80s, and they used to come over here a bit, and they were so amazingly inventive. And although you could hear their Gypsy, if you like, background, I mean, they were so aspirational and ambitious in where they were going, and as you say, so telepathic. It was like one of the most ultimate guitar duo, and I was totally impressed with them at the time. And
they still are.
Well, yes, exactly. But I mean, particularly at that moment, it was like, wow, total wow.
Boulou and Elios Ferret in October 2001 with the pianist Alain Jean-Marie playing one of Bach's two-part inventions. That's BWV 772, arranged by the brothers and very much taken in their own direction. It comes from an album called Intersection on the Fremo label. When I was in Paris researching a documentary for the 50th anniversary of Django's death in 2003, one of the musicians I went to talk to was the guitarist Christian Escudé, and he immediately said, "I'm not a manouche. I'm a Gitane player." But he actually led for a long time, John, a group called the Trio Gitane. This is actually his own band, but doing the same kind of thing. So this is Christian with Paul Chalin-Ferré, who's the son of the Chalin-Ferré and nephew of Barrow, who we heard earlier on, and Frédéric Sylvestre on guitar. This is quite typical of the sort of work that Christian has done, both with his own group and with the Trio Gitane.
Yes, I mean, he's one of the first guitarists that we're talking about that I came across in the 1970s, playing a Gibson 175 jazz guitar, and playing, really, jazz guitar with a little bit of inflection, obviously unconscious inflection, I think, from his background, but really moving away from the Reinhardt tradition. And, of course, that was part of the time.
I suppose this is just before Dizz Dizzley persuaded Stefan back to the traditional lineup.
Yes, Escudé is from the same generation as, say, myself, I would say. So he would not want to be playing like Django. He'd want to be inspired by Django to move onwards. And you can hear that in his playing here, although this is an acoustic trio from later on, obviously. But his own soloing is jazz, American, with some inflections.
Now, the album it's come from, which is slightly hard to find now, but a very good cross-section of his work, is on the French Polygram label, originally sponsored by a well-known brand of French cigarettes. And this has him playing the old jazz standard After You've Gone. Paul Chalin-Ferré sticks pretty closely to the Django model. He's the first soloist we hear. And then when Christian comes along, although it's on acoustic guitar, you could imagine this might be what Charlie Christian would still be playing like had he lived.
Yes, I think so. And I think what we're seeing here is the beginning of that change, where you've got Christian Escudé, who would think of himself as a jazz musician of Gitane origin, and then you get the next generation that see themselves very much in an ethnic mould, I think, and thus look to Django as the source and the end, as it were. ¶¶
trio of Christian Escudet, Paul Chalin-Ferré and Frédéric Sylvestre in May 1992 from Christian Escudet's album Holidays on French Polygram. Well, John, you were saying that this retro movement was starting to take hold at the time that that was recorded. In fact, a little earlier than that, around about 1980, I was roped in to play at the Pizza Express with a Belgian gypsy band called Wazo. And the guitarist in that band was simply the most extraordinary recreation of Django I'd ever experienced in my life, Fappy Lafatin. We did a week in Soho listening to him, and subsequently I worked with him a lot. And I don't think I've heard Fappy playing a lot that wasn't in some way rooted directly in Django. But he seems to me to have consolidated all the periods of Django's work and somehow rolled it into a style that is slightly more homogenous than Django's 20-year span as a recording artist.
Yes, perhaps. When I first heard a Fappy record, I thought, this is Django recordings I've never heard, you know, because this album we're going to hear was recorded in the old style with everybody grouped around one mic, and it may have been this album I heard. And I was amazed to find out that it wasn't Django, that it was somebody else. And then this immediately puts me into mind of the way that things always happen across the board and the way that movement in jazz around this time, if you look at Wynton Marsalis and people like this, was this feeling that one should be true to the source. And Fappy is very true to the source. He's also very listenable and very creative in his own way. And it's such an attractive sound he makes. And he also has the jazz elements of Django so strongly. I mean, he does leave space, does sort of recognisable, concise phrasing. He doesn't play too fast and it lilts along beautifully. So it's a very attractive sound, but it is in that sense backward looking rather than, as we were talking about, Escudet, who would be seeing himself as trying to find a new direction. Whether he succeeds or not is another thing, but he would be trying for that, whereas Frappy is saying, okay, here is the great source, I will be true to that source, but also be myself in it.
This is Fappy playing 12th Year, which is a Django composition, with the English group Le Jazz, led by your cohort Dave Kelby on
yes,
guitar.
Yes, Dave's responsible for all this. He put it together and got it recorded. So well done, Dave.
Year, Fappy Lafatin with Le Jazz, Dave Kelby, Pete Finch on guitars and Tony Beaver on bass in August 1996. And that's on Le Jazz et al. Label, and the album's called Hungaria. We're now going to look at perhaps the current best example of a touring musician who's revived the Django style. Birelli Legrand first burst on the scene as, I think, not even quite in his teens. I think he was 12 when he started recording, and he was simply phenomenal on the electric guitar, on the acoustic guitar. Worked with Jaco Pastorius, went to the States, did a little bit of jazz rock, and then, quite suddenly, in the 1990s, rediscovered his roots. And it seems to me, John, that Birelli, much like Fappy, has discovered the way of bringing out the tonality of the acoustic instrument and also looking back at what Django had to offer as a starting point.
Yes, I mean, Birelli is obviously an extraordinary guitar player by any standards and also a very interesting character in the sense that, obviously, he started as a young boy, playing this stuff and being put on show, as it were. And then I think he really rebelled against that and resented it and switched to the electric guitar and lost a lot of work as a result. So he went back to it. End of the 90s, wasn't it?
Yes, and the album we're going to hear, which is from 2001, is the name of the band that he's toured with ever since, the Gypsy Project.
Yes. His work on acoustic guitar with the Gypsy Project still, I think, like Fappy, it does refer to Django. He does manage to bring in all sorts of quirks and tricks and things that really appeal to me because they're extra style, as it were, outside the style. He'll suddenly play something that you go, ooh, where did that come from, you know? And that's Birelli to me.
Situ Savé, played by Birelli Le Grand, and The Gypsy Project from the album called The Gypsy Project on the Dreyfus label, and the full personnel on the Jazz Library website, once again, bbc.co.uk/radio3/jazzlibrary. We're going to move closer to your own experience now, John, for the only track in this programme that features Stefan Grappelli, with whom you played for a long time. But in 1993, he was playing his 85th birthday concert at Carnegie Hall in New York with a little group including the American guitarist Bucky Pizzarelli. And then for the last numbers, they were joined by this extraordinary trio of Manouche musicians from Holland, Stokkelo Rosenberg, his brother Nushko on guitar, and their other brother, Nonny, on the bass. And somehow or another, this took Stefan back to the excitement of the early years with Django. And you can hear the audience in Carnegie Hall going absolutely potty at the arrival of this incredible gypsy trio.
Yes, that's right. Yes. When I toured with Stefan Grappelli, which I did for a long time, I mean, I used to go to the promoters and sort of say, look, I really would like to play with piano, bass and drums, you know. And they go, no, Steph, you've got to play with the guitars. Not that he minded playing with the guitars, but he loved the piano. And as soon as he's with a Django-type guitarist, this absolutely revs everybody up. And of course, Stokkelo Rosenberg is another notch up in the sort of phenomenal virtuosity stakes, isn't it, with Stokkelo? He's the sort of one of the modern wizards. And here he is with Stefan. And of course, as you say, it's brilliant and everybody loves it.
Sweet Georgia Brown, that's Stefan Grappelli and the Rosenberg Trio live at Carnegie Hall on the 3rd of June 1993, and that's on the Angel label. Well, you mentioned Stokkelo Rosenberg, but around the same time, yet another member of that family appeared on the scene, Jimmy Rosenberg. And you're saying that Stokkelo kind of pushed the boundaries further. I mean, Jimmy's another remarkable virtuoso. And here's Jimmy doing what he does very well, which is turning up in another country and playing this style with like-minded musicians, just as we heard Fappy doing with the English guys in the 90s. This is Jimmy Rosenberg and the Hot Club of Norway with Andreas Olberg as the other solo guitarist. And it seems to me that this is saying that this is a European form of jazz. Europeans play it extremely well, and it can be done anywhere from Andalusia right the way up to frozen wastes of northern Norway.
It's interesting you say it's a European way of playing, because I think that's really true, and I'll probably get shot down for saying this, but I think the American versions of it don't seem to... John Jorgensen aside, who's got a lovely style and plays beautifully, but it's not quite the same, you know, whereas this stuff, and this guy, Andreas Olberg, and who's obviously not a gypsy but is European, And it seems to suit the European way of playing, and I think Europeans do it best.
And this light, very bouncy rhythm section seems to me to complement Jimmy's slightly lighter, less plangent style than Stockolo Rosenberg.
Yes, I think you can say that. Jimmy is bouncier than Stockolo. Stockolo I almost think of like a sort of classical musician, a bit like a guy we haven't mentioned, Raphael Feiss. It's the jazz quotient to me. Jimmy has a little more of the jazz quotient, Stockolo a little less. It's not a value judgment, it's just the way they are. And Stockolo is more classic. Jimmy is, yeah, as you say, more bouncy, a little bit more romantic, a little more movement on the beat.
By Jimmy Rosenberg with the Hot Club of Norway on the album Django's Tiger on Hot Club Records, and that was recorded in 2002. Well, that's nearly it for this edition of Jazz Library. You can get full details of all the various dynasties that we've discussed in this programme, the Ferres, the Schmidts, the Rosenbergs, all on the Jazz Library website. That's bbc.co.uk/radio3/jazzlibrary. And we're going to finish, John, by going to the home of this style of music in the UK, the Cucumb Bar in London, which presents this style of music almost every night of the week, and a remarkable solo guitarist, Angelo de Bar. I heard him on one of the compilation albums that that club puts out, and I should again say that they're a good cross-section of all the musicians who tour and play here in the UK from time to time. But Angelo seems to me to have something special in that he's a chordal soloist as well as a single-line player.
Well, yes, what I know of Angelo is that he's a very well-rounded musician, and he knows a lot, a hell of a lot about music, and he's got a lot to draw on when he plays. I mean, he's here in this track we're going to listen, playing in the style, as it were. But it's always interesting. It's a bit like Birelli. It's always interesting when somebody has got other stuff that can come in, you know, and that's always exciting to me. And this is a fantastic recording, actually, with a great band, I have to say.
They would, of course, be three quarters of your own band, yes, Sweet Chorus. Christian Garrick on violin, Dave Kelby on rhythm guitar, and Andy Crowdy on bass.
Yes,
but I agree,
they sound the best.
They sound fantastic here. John, thanks very much. We're going to leave you with Angelo de Bar and Féerie. Was a Jazz Library podcast, and you can hear Jazz Library on Saturdays at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on BBC Radio 3.